listeners, and good afternoon. Good morning or good evening, depending on where you are in the world. This is the second hour of this Out of This World Radio program, International, with your host, Ted Maher, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Seattle, Washington, on 1150 AM. The program focuses on Out of This World information, including psychic phenomena, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. We will have only the best psychics and astrologers in the world on our program, and I guarantee it will be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you simply will not hear elsewhere. We are also the fastest-growing psychic and metaphysical radio program in the world, and we now have listeners in over 55 different countries on all continents. This program is supported by donations and supporters. If you'd like to support the program, please email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I wanted to thank our next guest is Yuri Geller, and I want to thank him so much for coming on today. But before we do, I'd like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including my good friend Carol, who does the designing the website and providing moral support, and without whose friendship and help this program would not have been possible. My dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla College. My dear friend Heidi in Switzerland, who's been helping to arrange a radio appearance by Eric von Doniken and other wonderful European psychics. My angelic and earthly family. My wonderful sound engineer, Eric Ryder Burris, and my station manager, Eric Krema, without whose help and support this program would not have been possible. Yuri, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Ted. Thanks for inviting me back onto your show.
Wonderful. It's wonderful to have you today. The purpose of my program, the radio program, is to raise human consciousness, and I can't think of a better, more positive person to have on my show but you, Yuri.
I thank you very much for that. And you know, the music you played, Secret Agent, I don't know if you did it intentionally, but
intentionally.
It is a piece from a documentary that is out to be seen, and I hope you do get to my website and watch the film. It's produced by the BBC, and it's called The Secret Life of Uri Geller. And I think that you'll all really enjoy seeing this documentary. I think you've seen it, Ted, haven't you?
I have, Yuri. Wonderful, wonderful film. And I urge everyone to look at that. Absolutely.
Great. So because you already have me on, what would you like to talk about? It's tonight for me. I'm in England now. I just came back from Israel, and it's 11 o'clock, past 11 here, and you may ask me whatever you want to.
Well, I wanted to tell you that, you know, the last time I had you on several months ago, Yuri, you are the most positive person I think I've ever had on my show. And what I like about you is on your website, you give concrete examples of the things that people can do, practical things that people can do in order to think about creating a positive future for themselves. And along those lines, I don't know if you know a Japanese scientist called, I'm sure you've heard of him, Dr. Masaru Emoto. He's a famous water scientist.
Yes, I have.
Well, he was on my show 2 weeks ago, and we did an intention experiment where we sent love and light to the people in Gaza for them to at least calm things down, stop fighting, so they could deliver food and medical supplies. And that happened. I did that at 3:30 p.m. on a Friday afternoon 2 weeks ago. But by the time I got to the place where I was staying at 8:30, I turned on CNN, and they had just spontaneously decided to have this 12-hour ceasefire beginning at 9 p.m. Seattle time, which I thought was wonderful. So positive thoughts do help situations, and they do help people. I know that we did a watch experiment the last time you were on, too, where I brought my grandfather's watch, which had not worked in 40 or 50 years, and you got it to work on the air.
Well, you know, I've done the watch experiment and spoon experiments hundreds of times, maybe even over 1,000 times. And the response is always, like you say, positive, because things do happen in people's homes, especially if they believe that they can achieve the impossible. It's not my energy, by the way, when I fix a broken watch over the airways, whether it's on the radio show or on television. I believe that I simply act as a trigger. I'm almost like an enabler, and a catalyst to the power of the mind of people who are listening or watching me. When you talked about positive thinking, you see, Ted, you know very well that when we think, we create an energy. I think I mentioned it last time I was on the show that in 1924, Albert Einstein proved to the world scientifically that everything and anything is made from energy in the universe. Everything is made from energy. You, me, the telephone I'm holding, the computer or the radio you're listening out of, the walls around you. You can bang your fist on the wall and it will, you know, feel solid to you, but it's not solid. The wall is actually energy. It's vibrating in a certain frequency that to us feels solid. So because everything is vibrating and because everything is made from energy, even our thought waves, our thought patterns are energy forms. And I truly believe that we can emit that energy, and if it's a positive thought, we can send that to someone, to an entity, to a person, to an animal, and they will receive it. They will feel that energy no matter where you are on planet Earth or beyond. I think that energy travels probably faster than the speed of light, and it reaches individuals. So this is what I tell everyone whenever I can, and in my books that are actually available to read free of charge on my website. So don't worry, there's no charge. You just get on urigeller.com and click on books. It'll take you to many of my books, and you may read them. One of my very successful books is called Uri Geller's Little Book of Mind Power. It'll take you 15 minutes to read, but it'll definitely give you empowerment, positive thinking. It'll motivate you, and it'll inspire you. So I truly believe that when a group of people do think or meditate on a positive target, then positive things could occur out of that type of a session.
Wonderful. I love your message, Lur. You have such a profound message, especially, I know, you know, people are having tough times. Maybe somebody's lost their job or they're having difficulties in their relationship or, you know, look at the conflicts around the world. But if we send love and light and think in a positive way, think how much better the world would be if everyone practiced that all at once.
Yeah, very, very much so. And I tend to do my little meditation at 11:11, whether it's AM or PM, but 11:11 to me has always been a mystical or mysterious, an enigma. It's actually a number, a figure, an hour that evokes mysteriousness in me. And I'm sure you've spoken about the 11:11 phenomenon in the past, but it is so interesting, and there's no doubt in my mind that some of our listeners right now say, wow, 11:11, yeah, my eyes are attracted to 11:11, whether it's on a digital clock or in my car or on my oven, my computer, you know, in my kitchen, in the hotel rooms, door numbers, and so on. And how interesting it is, I started seeing 11:11. My eyes were attracted to 11:11 about, I would say, 30 years ago. And I thought there were coincidences, but then they became more synchronized. There was more synchronicity than coincidence. And then I wrote an article about it on my website, and I was inundated by tens of thousands of emails from people all around the world saying, wow, we experienced the same phenomenon. So if you are now listening to us and would like to take part in an experiment or meditation, positive thinking, try to do it at 11:11.
Well, Yuri, forgive me for interrupting, my friend, but isn't it 11:11 in 2 minutes in England where you are now?
You know what? Let me look at my clock. Well, yeah, that's bizarre now. And I did not, this wasn't, this, by the way, wasn't planned. It's that's what I mean. By the way, one more interesting observation, that many famous people, whether they are politicians or holy individuals, if you count the number of the letters in their names, they come to 11. Like, for instance, Jesus Christ is 11 letters. John Kennedy, 11 letters. Barack Obama, 11 letters. George W. Bush, 11 letters. Bill Clinton, 11 letters. Jimmy Carter, 11 letters. By the way, I can go on and on and on and on.
That's amazing. I had heard somewhere, and I don't remember the source, but there is one thing that I had heard when Lucifer came to the planet Earth, that there were a group of 1,111 angels who broke away from Lucifer, and they were in the good light, God's servants. And that's where I've been told, anyway, the Lebanon comes from. Perhaps you have a different perspective on it, but that's what I'd heard.
Well, that's also interesting. But 1111 is also attached to, actually, signs. Mm-hmm. For instance, scientists have found a gene on chromosome number 11 in mice, which may be involved in DNA repair. Now, this ties in with a theory that stem cells, which are found in bone marrow, for example, are responsible for the aging process when they become useless and non-resistant to DNA damage. So by making stem cells more hardy, more powerful, longevity can be increased. I mean, I'm not saying that we can stop the aging process, but certainly we can slow it down. Now, this gene could be involved in DNA repair. That would be a major, major discovery. And the fact that it is located on chromosome number 11, the correlation with a prolongation of life is incredible. Don't you find that amazing?
I think that's just totally incredible. I think at one time, the people on this planet lived a lot longer, but for whatever reason, we're now limited to, I don't know, 80, 90, 70 years, something like that. But I think at one time we lived a lot longer, myself.
Well, I had a very interesting relationship with a man called Image, who just died in New York. He was the oldest living male in the world, and he died at 111 years old.
Oh no!
In New York City, if you just bring up the oldest man dies at 111, Image, you will see the stories about him. He was an amazing individual who believed in the paranormal totally, and when I came to live in America in 1972. He contacted me, so I went over to his apartment. He was such an incredible individual, and he mentions me in some of his books, but I sometimes asked him, what's the secret? And he used to smile, and he was a positive thinker. So, yeah, who knows? Maybe if we all become positive thinkers, we might add a few years to our lives.
Well, I know you're an excellent remote viewer, and as part of being remote viewing, you can probably go into the future. So I was just curious, in 10 words or less, what do you see for the future of the world?
Well, first of all, more than 10 words. You know, remote viewing, although it's quite a popular word, but I don't know if everyone knows what it means. But if you ask yourself, what is remote viewing? Let me give you a little explanation. Remote viewing is a mental faculty that allows a perceiver to describe or give details about a target that is inaccessible to normal senses due to distance or time or shielding. So, for example, a viewer might be asked to describe a location on the other side of the world, which I've been asked to do many, many times. Mm-hmm. And this remote viewer, and by the way, we can all train ourselves to become remote viewers, say you've never visited that place ever, or you've never seen a picture of that place. So a viewer might describe an event that happened long ago, or describe an object sealed in a container or locked in a room, or perhaps even describe a person or an activity, all without being told anything about the target, not even its name or designation. And that is basically, in a capsule, what remote viewing is, or what remote viewing viewers are. So I truly believe that if you're intuitive, if you think you have a higher level of intuition than others, then you can learn to become a remote viewer. And remote viewers basically send their mind through space and time and bring back information. Now, I've done remote viewing, a lot of remote viewing for intelligence services. I urge you, please, to get to Amazon and get a book called The Secret Life of Uri Geller. It's the same title as the documentary. The documentary is on my website to watch free, but I urge you to get the book. It's not my book. I didn't write it. A journalist in England who writes for The Guardian and Time magazine, Jonathan Margolis, he wrote the book. And in it, you will see what we've done to or with many different intelligence services who could not locate certain objects or movements of armies or air force or navies around the world.
Amazing, amazing. There is one story I have to ask you about, Uri, and it was back, I think, during the 80s, that you, it was during the nuclear disarmament negotiations, and the Russian chief negotiator, would you like to tell my many listeners about that? That was very interesting. What happened?
Yeah, Ted, what happened is I was very close to Senator Claiborne Pell, who was the head of the American Foreign Relations Committee, and Ambassador Max Kempelman. And Senator Pell believed in my powers to such an extent that he introduced me in a shielded room, actually, in the Capitol, in the rotunda of the Capitol. Most of you don't know, but there is a shielded room there, which means that it's shielded from any Russian eavesdropping or any intelligence, other intelligence agencies out of America cannot penetrate that shielded room with any unknown technological means. So you can talk openly and about top secret stuff. So he brought me there and introduced me to people. And then he asked me whether I could convince the Russians to sign the Nuclear Arms Reduction Treaty. I said, I don't know, but I definitely would like to try. So the Senator Claiborne Pell arranged a secret meeting with Ambassador Max Kempelman and myself in London. And I knew that nobody will ever believe me, so I actually asked my brother-in-law to photograph Max Kempelman and myself from across the street. When I left, Max walked, he stepped out and shook my hand, so I actually have a picture. And the ambassador briefed me, and he explained to me what is a necessity for the Americans to have, and then they flew me to Geneva. And I was ushered really close to the head of the Russian negotiating team, a man called Yuli Voronsov, who was then later on, years later, was the head of the Russian head of the Russian UN delegation in New York. And my task was to bombard his mind telepathically. And I know this sounds weird, bizarre, strange and quirky, but my task and mission was to convince Yuli Voronsov to sign the Nuclear Arms Reduction Treaty. So I really got close to him. I was maybe three to five inches away from his head. And I bombarded him. I started saying and visualizing him signing, and I kept saying in my mind, sign, 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 sign. And believe it or not, Ted, they signed. The Russians signed. And obviously, you can imagine, I cannot take full, you know, response. I can't say that it happened totally because of me. There are many, many other people. I was there with Vice President Al Gore. And this does work. I know it because I've done it on many different occasions with many different other individuals, and to bring in positive results. I would never do anything negative through my intelligence work with different intelligence agencies. And also, I was never paid for such work. I did it on ideological reasons, for our ideological reasons. And I've done some very interesting stuff throughout my life, and that's all in The Secret Life of Uri Geller, both in the film and the book.
Fascinating. That's just fascinating. What a wonderful story. There was, and I remember reading that in the early 70s, you were given a huge boost in Israel by Prime Minister Golda Meir when she was asked on a national radio program what she predicted for the future of Israel. She said, "Don't ask me, ask Uri Geller."
So, you see, Ted, that was the beginning of my career because I was kind of known, but I did little house parties. You know, I would go. I was actually, my main job was I was a male model, believe it or not. I had a gorgeous girlfriend who introduced me to a photographer, and one day a male model didn't show up, so he said, "You take his place." And 2 weeks later, I opened the national paper, and I saw myself on a double page spread. I said, "Oh my gosh, that's unbelievable!" And I also got paid for it because I was we were so poor. My mother and I struggled throughout my childhood, and these parties. One day I bent a key of a photographer, and he freaked out, and he said, "Nobody is going to ever believe me. You've got to come to my house. I'm giving a house party today." And I started doing that, and I was getting paid for it. And then these parties became more prestigious, you know, from photographers to lawyers, from lawyers to judges, from judges to generals. And then one day, Golda Meir was in one of these house parties, and I freaked her out with telepathy. And the next day, she mentions me on radio. and that was it. And Benjamin Netanyahu, who you hear about every day now, the Prime Minister of Israel, is actually in the documentary talking about me. I know I'm showing off now a little, but he is in the documentary, The Secret Life of Uri Geller. So do watch it tonight. It's on my website, urigeller.com. I think you'll be quite amazed. So I met very interesting presidents and prime ministers, kings and queens throughout my life. One of the very interesting meetings was with President Carter because he, you know, there were rumors that he believed in UFOs or he saw a UFO. I can't quite remember. But I was somehow, we won't go into the story how, but I got into the White House and on the inauguration day and I grabbed his hand. He looked into my eyes, and I looked into his eyes. And suddenly he says to me, "Uri, can you find oil for us? Can you find energy?" My task was to bombard. I don't even know if I ever said this on radio, but I was told by someone who we won't mention who, but I was told by someone to bombard him, President Carter, to release millions of dollars into psychical research. And while he was talking to me about energy, all I did looked into his eyes very deeply and I said, "Give millions of dollars to psychical research, release money." And it's true, and it did work.
Well, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. And didn't they start a remote viewing program after that? I think
exactly. Yeah. Indirectly, I started the remote viewing at Stanford Research Institute, where I was being tested. There was an amazing psychic called Ingo Swann, he was really incredible, and that's the whole that time, you know, the hippies in San Francisco, the scientists like Jack Sarfati and George. There's so many interesting individuals. I was even taken from Stanford to the Lawrence Livermore Radiation Labs, and you know that's where they build nuclear weapons. And they wanted to see if my mind could trigger a weapon. But a very weird and strange phenomenon happened there. You won't believe it when you read it in the book. When Jonathan wrote The Secret Life of Uri Geller, he warns people that what you're about to read kind of needs a mental warning because it's so far out and so bizarre that it'll be hard for you to believe in. But it did happen. And so please, I urge you to read the book.
Well, one thing I have to ask you, Uri, and you've done such amazing, wonderful work, and I think the most important thing about your work is to show all of us that we're powerful spiritual beings who can do wonderful, positive things on this planet if we want. One of the things I'd love to ask you about is this program is a public program supported by donations, and if you could send some positive thoughts out there for people to contribute to the program, that'd be great. They just have to email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com.
I will send that telepathically right now. How's that?
Thank you, my friend.
Tell me, Ted, I want to ask you something. There are many, many radio stations that provide psychic shows and so forth. How did you first get involved in this? And what do skeptics think about you? Because throughout my career, you know, skeptics tried to debunk me, they mocked me, they sneered at me, I had to sue people that because I was libeled, in some cases very serious libel. And, you know, I don't have to tell you about the amazing James Randi who dogged me, you know. I mean, in my opinion, he was totally obsessed with me. But what about you? What do you say to skeptics? Because I'm sure you get some negative emails too.
Well, not very often. I have to tell you, I've been doing this for 20 years now, and it all started with my foster mother, Terry, wonderful, beautiful lady who taught me about the other side. When my father passed away in March of 1999, he contacted her in the spirit state, and I did a life review with her for multiple times every day from 1999 all the way to the present. Now, she passed away in 2012, but the fact that she's on the other side doesn't really matter because I can still contact her, and she's with me right now. I have about 10, 12 angels around me at any one time, and during this time, I've been told that I've advanced 16 spiritual lifetimes. If each lifetime takes approximately 80 years, Earth years, to advance one spiritual lifetime, then I've advanced approximately somewhere.
And that triggered this powerful urge for you to have a radio show of this nature.
Right.
Touching back onto skeptics, you know, people like Randi and others, actually, I have to thank them for boosting my career because, you know very well, I'm a very good publicist, and I say this shamelessly, and I knew how to use the publicity I was getting from negative sources to boost my career. You know that Oscar Wilde 100 years ago said there's only one worse thing in life than being talked about, and that's not being talked about. And after the Johnny Carson show, which I actually walked into a trap because things didn't really work. It was set up. I was set up. Johnny Carson was very, very skeptical. And I realized that I thought I was finished. And the next day, Merv Griffin called me and invited me onto his show. And that's when it dawned on me that there is no such thing as bad publicity. But what's interesting, and I'd like you to remember this, as, what are skeptics actually? And I say this, that even if you're a true skeptic, I have to look up at the history of skepticism. And I did that a while ago. And what I discovered that a true skepticism actually means to be open-minded to all possibilities and closed off to no possibilities. And what skeptics, what they're doing is that they do use or they label skepticism into such a degree that their motives are, and this is my own opinion, and I believe, is that they are almost prejudiced and cynical, biased, narrow-minded, which is not at all what skepticism is about when you look at the origins of skepticism. So I'm not talking about all skeptics, because many skeptics were very good friends of mine. I accepted that they didn't believe in what I did, and but we could still be friends. But then you have those crusaders who would not believe in anything and just totally close-minded. But no matter what they said about me throughout my career, it always, at the end of the day, helped me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting, you know, and I, during my last hour, I explained to my listeners that even when bad things happen at the time or you have an adversary, often it works out for the better because it makes you stronger and it brings out things that would not have ordinarily been brought out. You know, and
yes,
as I said... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Ted, but if you're in show business and if you are on radio or television, you want to be known. You want to have more listeners. You want to reach more people. So the more they talk about you, the more people will be interested in your work and what you do. Whether it's negative, positive, not here, not there, your name still is mentioned. And that's what counts. I used to measure the articles that were written about me, not read them. I used to have a little ruler, a tape measure, and I would measure it. And I'd say, oh, it's almost a full page. That's fantastic.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing.
What I would like to mention is that let's depart now from the skeptics and the negative stuff and talk about the light and being open-minded and so on.
Wonderful.
I don't know, and I can't remember whether I said this last time, but I've learned a lot about being in an attitude of gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I've achieved a lot. Yes, I've made a lot of money. Yes, I live in a big house and so on, but I'm definitely not motivated anymore by money. I used to be, I have to admit. Mm-hmm. Why? Because I came from a relatively very poor family. I struggled in Israel, wanted to make it, wanted to buy my mother a television set. So I pushed myself. But I realized down the line that money could not buy me health. It couldn't buy me happiness. It couldn't buy you love. And I was obsessed in the early 70s, almost to the end of the 70s. I was ruthless. All I cared is about Uri Geller. I was on an ego trip. I was totally and utterly in a frenzy of trying to be successful, and that brought me down. I got bulimia. I couldn't handle the stress. It was also after the Six-Day War, in which you know, I had to fight and I was wounded, so that screwed me up. But then John Lennon, who lives very close to me in Manhattan, we were friends, he looked at me one day and he said, Uri, you are so thin, well, you look like an Auschwitz survivor, you should find spirituality. And I looked at him and I said, you know, John, I've heard of the word spiritual many times, but what is it? So he said, go to Japan and you'll find it. And I did that with my family. I disappeared into a forest with me, my wife, Hannah, my two children, my brother-in-law, my mother. And I've learned those things that you're talking about, the other side, the energies, the angels, nature, God. And I totally spiritualized myself. I guess that's the word. And I've learned today I am in an attitude of gratitude. And that's what I'd like our listeners to be in. Tomorrow morning when you wake up, try to put yourself in an attitude of gratitude, and you'll feel happiness or some type of a powerful feeling of joy overcoming you.
Uri, I'm not making this up, but just as you're speaking, the area right around me now is completely in white light. It's turned much, much whiter light. Thank you. I can feel it all
around.
Thank you. Wow. Well, we have many listeners in Japan who are listening to you now, by the way.
And, oh, lovely. To all my Japanese fans or listeners, I love you all, and I go to Japan twice a year, and actually I'm flying to Japan this month.
Well, really? Fantastic. Wonderful. Fantastic. There is a story. I have to tell you, I think the world as a whole, things are getting better, even though there's conflicts around the world. I don't think there's going to be a World War III. I think we're going to continue to have conflicts, but we're going to resolve them. That's my positive view of the future. And as Nostradamus said many centuries ago, after the 2030s, I think Nostradamus said that we would have 1,000 years of peace and prosperity and spiritual growth and enlightenment. And I think that's what's in store for humanity. I really do.
I hope so too, Ted, because if you open the television news, listen to the radio, read the newspapers, there are so many wars raging right now as we speak. So many people and women, children, innocent individuals are being killed. It's just the whole world it feels like it's on fire. But I do believe that it is a phase, like you said, and I do believe that we have to go through this. We have to navigate through this terrible tragedy that is happening around the world. And I'm talking mainly about wars, but it's not only wars. It's also Mother Nature is hitting us back. Right. And it's, the disease, Ebola, there is something, like it's almost like God or Mother Nature is telling us something. It's warning us. It's telling us, hey, people, you know, you've got to change. You've got to start thinking of peace. You've got to start purifying yourself. Mm-hmm. And maybe it is that cycle that we have to go through.
Well, I just want to send love and light to everyone listening to this program around the world. We have listeners actually in Syria, in Iraq, throughout Israel, in Egypt, throughout the Middle East. We also have listeners in Nigeria, South Africa, and Kenya, I know, listening to this program now. But I want to put a positive spin on our future, and I still think the future of humanity is still very bright, irregardless of the current challenges.
I think so too, and let's meditate on that. Maybe tomorrow, maybe when you'll be on the air, but if we can focus at 11:11 p.m. pre-midnight UK time, so figure that out. Whoever is on the line now listening to us, 11:11 p.m. before midnight UK time, I will be thinking for 11 minutes. About all of you, all your listeners, Ted, and we'll all link up in some type of a energy force and empowerment. I will be thinking and meditating for 11 minutes. I know it's a long time, but we'll do it. And think of world peace. Send peace around the world. Shroud the world with peaceful thoughts. And hopefully we'll contribute something. Because, again, it'll be a small contribution, but everything counts. And I think you'll agree with me, Ted.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Yuri. What a beautiful thought. For my listeners in the Pacific time zone in the United States and North America, 11:11 tomorrow p.m. UK time would be 3:11 here on the West Coast, or 4:11 in the Midwest, 4:11 in the Mountain States, 5:11 in the Midwest, and 6:11 on the East Coast.
Yes, and you around the world, wherever you are, whether you're in Egypt or Israel or Syria or Iran or Iraq or Hong Kong, anywhere, India, England, Germany, just figure out the time that 11:11 UK time, figure out what time it will be for you, and I will be tuning in and focusing. I'll be at home tomorrow, and I will be thinking and sending you love, positive thinking, pure energy, and a very, very powerful empowerment. And I'll be wishing you lots of health, happiness, success, and peace of mind.
Hmm. What a wonderful thought. And that's wonderful, absolutely wonderful. I will. I have thousands of people who also follow me on Twitter too, and I'll Twitter that out as well to let people know.
Yeah, please do. And again, just to plug my website, if you will allow me, my website
is, of course,
www.urigeller.com. Uri Geller is spelled U-R-I-G-E-L-L-E-R.com. Mm-hmm. All my books are free to read. Please watch the BBC documentary. It's actually directed by an Oscar-winning director called Vikram Jayanti. Mm-hmm. I think you will be quite surprised and hopefully impressed. And if you can, get the book, The Secret Life of Uri Geller, from Amazon. And how many more minutes do we have? Are we coming up to the top of the hour?
We have 14 minutes left, Uri. We have a bit of time,
okay,
actually.
I would like to maybe spend... Do you actually get sometimes phone calls, or you don't do that?
Yes, absolutely. I get phone calls, and I just wanted to give out our numbers here in the studio for those who'd like to call in. Let's see. We have a toll for those of you who are in Western Washington. Our toll-free number, let me get it here, is 1-888. Hold on. I haven't memorized it. So it's 1-888-298-5569. And we also have a landline, too, at studio number at 425-373-5527. That's 425-373-5527. And for those of you who are just tuning in, this is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, on KKNW, 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Seattle, Washington. And we have on the line Uri Geller, one of the world's best world viewers, and probably one of the most positive people in the world.
Thank you so much. And by the way, if someone wants to speak to me now, call me. Call Ted. But don't ask me questions about your health or your future, because I'm not that type of a psychic. But if you have any other question that is kind of a neutral question, a paranormal question, UFOs, Michael Jackson, whatever, fire away. You know, because I'm still being inundated by emails from people who were huge fans of Michael Jackson. As you know, Michael was my best man when I renewed my wedding vows with my wife, Hannah. And I also designed Michael's last album. The last album he ever did is called Invincible. And you can buy it in any record shop. But I designed the drawing. I drew a drawing for him inside. You'll find it in the booklet of Invincible. What's very interesting that Michael asked me, he begged me to secretly instill the names of his children at that time, Prince and Paris. And I knew that the record people, the label, is going to go through my drawing with a microscope. Just to find maybe, you know, I instilled messages there and so on. But they eliminated a few symbols. Like, for instance, they took out the Star of David and they put a pentagram. They took out the word Jerusalem. But they couldn't find Michael's children's name. So they are in there. Now, if you have Invincible and you open the booklet, let's see if you can find their names. So if you have any question, just pick up the phone and call Ted, or if you don't want to be on air, you can always email me. My email address is on my website, and believe it or not, I answer most of my emails. Yes, I get 200 emails a day, but I have two Blackberries, and wherever I am, I'm with my Blackberry, and whenever an email comes in, I immediately answer the email.
Wonderful. I know you've been very, very prompt about my inquiries. I have to ask you, Uri, I don't know what your schedule's like this November, but I'm having a psychic conference in Port Townsend, Washington. Dr. Masaru Emoto's coming from Tokyo, along with some other famous American psychics. I don't know if you can come, but if you could, we cover all your expenses and plane ticket round trip from London.
Thank you so much. But probably I'll be in China. My television show, which is called The Successor, I created it about 9 years ago in Israel, where I'm looking for the next me, the next Uri Geller. It's entertainment.
Oh, fantastic.
It's entertainment. Many of the performers are mentalists. Some of them are illusionists, magicians. Some of them are psychics. Mm-hmm. I don't want to know how they do what they do. All I want to know and all I want them to do is to blow the minds of people at home. So it's been very successful. It's been on NBC in America for 11 weeks, and it's been in another 16 countries, and it's going to China now. Oh, so I'll be very busy because, you see, Ted, doing a TV series of 11 weeks, every week a show, is not easy because it's not only I have to be there because I'm the only judge, but it's the promotion, it's the radio shows, it's the photographs for the posters and the TV guide, it's the interviews with different press outlets, and it's meeting the contestants, it's meeting the producers, the directors. It's a happening, but I love doing it, and I hope it'll go to a few more countries that I want to kind of reach, and then I'll pack it in because it's been now on the road for almost 9 years, and that's a long time.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. Let me check with my sound engineer real quick to see if we have callers. Eric, do we have any callers?
We do. We've actually got Jackie from Seattle on the line right now.
All right, Jackie. Hi, Jackie. Good. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you, Jim?
Hi, Jackie. I'm fine, Jackie. Good to hear your voice.
Oh, good to hear your voice, too. Hey. I just want to say, hey, Yuri, trying to think about what to ask you. Hi, I'm Jackie.
Let me ask you something. First of all, if you don't mind, how old are you?
I will be 60 this October.
So you probably remember me from Johnny Carson, from Merv Griffin, from Mike Douglas, and all those shows
I've
done.
Yeah, you know, you're really good. Because I was sitting there thinking, what do I want to ask you besides will you come on my show, my radio show? But didn't you do a thing years ago? I think it was when my daughter was born that year, and it was 1974. And you took, a Polaroid camera and saw it in your mind.
Exactly. You remember that. And
yes,
Jackie,
that blew me away.
You must either be a mind reader or a telepath or a psychic because you'll have to believe me, I was holding that magazine with me on the cover today. It's called Popular Photography. Maybe the magazine still exists.
Wow.
And the reason I was holding it today is because I'm throwing out hundreds and hundreds of magazines and newspaper clippings that I've amassed and hoarded for 40 years. And
wow.
I didn't want to throw Popular Photography out because I'm on the cover of that, holding a Nikon camera with a sealed lens to my forehead.
Yes.
The story actually in the magazine is a negative story, but I was holding it today, and you're asking me that question. You blew my mind.
I love it. Yeah, well, actually, Ted's my friend, and I have a program called Conquest Consciousness, parked right next to Ted there on KKNW, and so I do the consciousness work, and what really is amazing to me in your work is that the power of our mind, and I love, the positiveness, how bottom line is we can take our thought and thinking into the either, connecting with our galactic families, bringing love on the planet, or we can go into destruction. And so for that, tuning into you holding that magazine, because that was what was flashing in my mind, because I remember, I think I saw it on the news or something, and she was just a baby, so that would have been 1974. That flashed in my mind.
Because I didn't throw the magazine out, I will look at the date, but it must be around either 75, 4, 5, 6, or 7, because that's when I lived in New York, and I did all these big shows around the country on, you know, first of all, in universities and theaters. And, you know, the National Enquirer had me almost every week with my hands, touch Uri Geller's hands and feel his energy. And then the next week they would get thousands of letters that people won the lotto and got that and their back pay. It was extraordinary. So the National Enquirer loved me. I had my blue spot in the magazine and so on. But yes, and so different newspapers and magazines came to me for all kinds of weird things. But that was a demonstration that I've learned from a man called Ted Sirius, who I didn't meet him personally, but one of the scientists that tested me, Dr. Andra Puharic, he told me about Ted Sirius, who could take pictures with his mind. Yeah. And I tried it, and it worked. So it freaked me out. Obviously, you know, skeptics said, oh, it's all trickery and all that, but who cares?
Yes, well, you know, but the implication, though, Yuri and Ted, the implication that we could hold a thought in our mind and then transmit that into the photograph is really powerful, because in it, when we hold, like, you know, Yuri, I really appreciate your humanitarianism and your good for the all, like, not, you know, when you had done the mediation, if you will, and the mental telepathy, communicating your thoughts for the good of all, you know. So it just, I think it's really powerful, because it really shows the power of thought and thinking and consciousness, and how important it is that we see just how powerful it is, and to really be projecting that thought of our planet being healed. You know,
yeah.
Ted, like you're talking
yeah.
about the prediction of Nostradamus and 1,000 years. I was thinking in my mind, Ted, when you said that, I was like, how about forever?
Well, Nostradamus said way back in the 16th century France that it would last 1,000 years, but our evolution would continue after that. It would just that we would become a space-based civilization. We would just become a Star Trek. Where we would move off planet, and we would.
Well, Ted, maybe we move to this planet. You know. I don't quite buy into the Darwinism theory that we crawled out of the muck. Who knows? Maybe 5,000 or 8,000 or 10,000 years ago, a UFO crashed on planet Earth, and we actually crawled out of the UFO, and we evolved to become human beings. Who knows?
I think that's it.
I mean, you can't really rubbish anything. You can't really debunk anything, because there is infinity out there, and infinity means no end. And if there is no end, then everything and anything is possible in the universe.
Yeah.
Well, I agree with you totally. Don't hang up, Jackie. And I just wanted to make it. We've got about 2 minutes left, and I just want to say to my many listeners that you're listening to Out of This World Radio with your host Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Seattle, Washington. We're on the line with Uri Geller, and I just want to thank you, Uri, so much for coming on. 1 week from today, we'll be having Laura Eisenhower, who's Dwight D. Eisenhower's daughter, who will be talking about the UFO agreements that her father signed, and. Uri, I want you to wrap up the show. I appreciate it.
Well, I'll wrap it up with something amazingly synchronized.
Okay.
You just mentioned Eisenhower. Well, I live in the village where Dwight Eisenhower, General Eisenhower, had his summer home. The house is right next to my house.
Really? My goodness.
Really? <Well. laughs> So there you go. If you Google the village of Sonning-on-Thames, and put Eisenhower's name next to Sonning-on-Thames, the house will come up.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic.
I mean, you could have had anyone next week. So that is how I will wrap up the show, that everything is synchronicity in life. And I would like to send you all a big hug, lots of kisses, lots of love. Always stay positive, believe in yourself, and that's it. I love you all, and I hope we'll meet again very soon on your radio show.
Thank you so much, Uri. And remember, tomorrow at 11 p.m. United Kingdom time, we'll be doing meditation across the world for world peace. And that would be 3:11 p.m. Pacific time. So, and I'd love your... I'd love your comments and support as well. Okay. Bye-bye, Yuri. Thank you so much for coming on today, my friend.